Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. This week we return with another Mumbrella 360 podcast. I'm talking regulating the media and the future of press regulation in Australia with Professor Julian Disney, Chairman of the Australian Press Council, Campbell Reid, Group Editorial Director at News Limited, Peter Frey, Publisher and Editor-in-Chief at the Sydney Morning Herald, and Matthew Ricketson, who is Assistant to the Finkelstein Independent Media Inquiry. We look at, is the Press Council fit for purpose? The Council's funding? Seven West pulling out of the Press Council? Is the APC a toothless tiger? And does the public trust the media? Let me tell you about our panel. Firstly, we have Professor Julian Disney. He's chairman of the Australian Press Council. Professor Disney has been chair of the APC since December 2009. Julian is in second furthest from where I am at the moment. Matthew Ricketson most recently was assistant to the Finkelstein Independent Media Inquiry. I've always wondered whether to pronounce it Finkelstein or Finkelstein, and I'm hoping that Matthew will help me out with that shortly. Stein, thank you. Matthew was appointed inaugural professor of journalism at the University of Canberra in 2009. And before that, he was media and communications editor for The Age between 1995 and 2006. He ran the journalism program at RMIT. Campbell Reid is editorial director at News Limited. Campbell joined News Limited in 1981. He's edited The Australian and The Daily Telegraph and been group editorial director since 2007. His crowning career achievement, though, is winning the Battle of the Media debate at Mumbrella 360 last year. And Peter Frey of the Sydney Morning Herald. He was appointed publisher and editor-in-chief of the SMH in February 2011. Prior to that, while editor, the SMH won Pampers Newspaper of the Year twice in a row. Peter's also edited the Sunday Age and the Canberra Times. So before we get into talking to the panel, let me just give you a little bit of context over where we're at for those who haven't been following the twists and turns. Media Minister Stephen Conroy is currently mulling over two reports, the Independent Media Inquiry, of which, as I say, Matthew was a part, and the Convergence Review. I should mention, by the way, we did invite Stephen Conroy to participate today as he's currently mulling them over, but the timing just didn't quite work. We'll get into some details shortly, but just the background. The Independent Media Inquiry, amongst other things, recommended the creation of a News Media Council, a government-funded body it describes as enforced self-regulation. Meanwhile, the Convergence Review, amongst other things, recommends regulating the larger content service enterprises, as it labels them, via a news standards body, as it labels potentially it. Now, the current situation where we're at when it comes to regulating the press is that Julian Disney's Australian Press Council regulates newspapers and their associated websites, plus a handful of independent publishers, Mumbrella included, Declaration of Interest. Meanwhile, the broadcast regulator ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, regulates TV and radio directly. So just a little bit of context for those who wanted it. I think we'll start with the Press Council. And Julian, I'm going to come to you for the first to have first bite of this. Press Council, you're still relatively new to the role. What I'd like to know is what kind of job do you see the Press Council having done in recent years, and is it fit for purpose, Julian?
Well, I think I've sort of been fairly blunt publicly, and I think many members of the Council would agree that we haven't done well enough in the past, although we've done better than most people think, because one of the ways in which we haven't done well is in getting across what we do. And part of that, for example, is that to the extent the public sees what we do at all, it's through our adjudications, and yet 90% of complaints are not dealt with that way. They're dealt with usually much more quickly and informally and often very satisfactorily. And we haven't been getting that out well enough. We also haven't, even our adjudications have not been published prominently enough, but there's a very big change of foot there. I think you see it epitomised just in the last 2 days. If you look at the Telegraph, for example, which has run two adjudications, one today and one yesterday, the new model where we do insist on due prominence. The newspapers have signed up to a contractually enforceable obligation that they will publish our adjudications prominently and with us defining what prominence is in that particular case. So that's been a very important step forward, but we've still got a long way to go. Firstly, in improving the speed and the vigour of our complaints, improving the monitoring of the impact of our standards. There's no point setting standards if you're not looking at whether they're working or not. They may be too hard, too tough, or too weak. We've certainly got to look into that, and we've got to extend ourselves more in the online area. We've done better in the online area than might be thought. We've had a lot of, the newspaper websites are three of the top six visited news websites, and 9MSN will be joining us shortly, subject to finalising arrangements. So we've actually done quite a lot in online already, but we're very pleased that, you know, Mumbrella and Crikey and others have joined us, and we need to expand that.
And just before I move on to the other panellists, when you inherited your role, the press council that you inherited, what sort of state was it in?
Others will have their views because, of course, I haven't been on it before. But I think there had been a feeling, probably across most of the council, I don't know, Campbell was there at the time and I wasn't, that it wasn't performing as well as it should. Now, the reasons for the cut in funding, which occurred just before I became chair, which was a big cut, are several, and some of them might have had to do with the performance of the council and some with other factors. But I think there was a belief on the council, and certainly a belief in the public, that it wasn't doing well enough. That's really what we've tried to address. And I emphasise we started on this before the Finkelstein or Convergence reviews were even a twinkle in Conroy's eye. Our strengthening program began in early 2010. A lot of what we're now introducing, we agreed to do in 2010, but we had to build. We were very low in funds. We had to get funds restored. We had to improve our structure and processes in a lot of ways. But these reviews have added impetus to us. They've taken us further and faster than we otherwise would have, but we were building up momentum in that direction before they were established.
Okay, well, I'll come to our editorial people in a minute. Matthew, what's your sense? Obviously, you've observed the press council over the years as a journalist, and now in your new role, you've looked quite closely. What sort of job has the press council done?
Well, I think the thing I'd like to alert people to, if you like, is that apart from Professor Disney, who came and made a couple of presentations to the media inquiry, previous chairs of the press council did as well. Professor Dennis Pierce, Professor Ken McKinnon, and Professor David Flint, all of whom had been chairs of the press council. And all but one of them, one of those four people, told the inquiry that there were significant problems with the press council, that with some of them Julian has already alluded to, in the form of the fact that its funding was too low, that people didn't really know what the press council was or what it did or what it stood for. So as a complaints handling mechanism, if it's not well known, that's a fatal blow, in the sense that you just it's not effective in that sense. Funding was an issue. The fact that the members of the council from the news media industry could come and go, there was no compulsion on them to remain in it because it was and is a voluntary self-regulatory model, and that in some cases that had happened. What particularly Dennis Pierce, but also Ken McKinnon presented to us was that was at least partly, if not wholly, because of adjudications that the council had made that various members didn't agree with. And so for all those reasons, it wasn't functioning very well. And the members of the news media industry who came along to give presentations to us said basically, look, it's working fine, got enough money, and no, it's not really a problem if we can come and go as we please. There were other people, academics, interested members of the public, etc., who made presentations as well. But and most of them were saying, yes, this body is not functioning particularly well. So that was the situation that we were faced with in terms of...
Okay, well, look, to the inquiry. Campbell, is it working fine? Has it worked fine?
Thanks, Tim. Look, as Julian said, I was there and I absolutely own up and have no problem in doing so, that news under my direction was instrumental in cutting the funding of the Press Council. You will remember GFC1 when at a meeting on the Gold Coast, when a few kilometres away from the Press Council's Gold Coast meeting, the editor of the Gold Coast Bulletin was laying off a lot of staff. And I felt at that time, as did many others, that the Press Council had become a very polite and comfortable debating society. That's unfair, and I don't mean that as unfairly as it sounds. But I felt that it had become a bit remote from the real work of standards and complaints, and that it's 22 or more people around a table debating an issue. It seemed structurally there were some problems. And I want to stress that from the moment that Julian was appointed, I, instrumental in cutting the funding, have been instrumental in now doubling the funding. And it's been an extraordinarily vigorous and tough process that both the SMH and Fairfax and News, as the major proprietors, have begun this process well before the government launched these inquiries, and we were committed to it. And the reality is, as of today, and in fact as of April, the funding of the Press Council has doubled. Under Julian's leadership, the standard of staff that are being employed and approached to work on the council is exponentially higher than it has been before. We're contractually obligated to be members of the council. Leaving the council is an extraordinarily hard thing to do, and the adjudications are being run with absolute agreed prominence in our publications. In the Sydney This Week in consecutive days, and all of our publications, ours and Fairfax, run very prominently that they adhere to the standards of the Press Council. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have work to do, but by God, we've done a lot of work. And now the test is, I think, for the government to do the hardest thing for all governments, and that is to keep their hand away from the regulatory button.
And we'll get to that issue in a minute.
It's well, just one last thing. I just want to say this. It annoys me that Matthew wrote as early as May the 26th that the media industry has said that the funding is fine and go away. The funding has been doubled. And I feel you just verbaled me a minute ago to say that the media companies at the Finkelstein Inquiry said it didn't need more funding. We said it did need more funding and have committed to that. So
that's what I'll say. Thanks.
Right, Matthew, I'll come back to you in a minute. Sure. But first of all, I want to bring Peter for Fairfax's side of this. Do you agree with Campbell that the industry takes responsibility for having cut the funds?
Oh, well, we have clearly increased the funds, and that conversation was going on before inquiries were held. I want to tease out one point which I think is very salient to all this debate, and that is the difference between perception and standard. And I know that under Julian, the standards of the Press Council and the standards of the people who work for the Press Council and the criteria by which the media is going to be judged moving forward, and I agree with all the speakers that this is still very much a work in progress, but the standards by which the media will be judged in the envelope of a self-regulation body is improving greatly. And I think this is a great offset against some of the commentary that is in primarily in the Finkelstein report, that the perception of the media is so woeful. Well, perceptions are one thing. As Greg Harwood and others have said, journalists don't exist to be loved, and no one expects to love journalists. Don't expect to be loved. What we do, though, what is incumbent upon us is to hold high standards that are policed internally, and if they fail, then are policed externally in the Press Council. And so I think the whole perception issue can be exploded by more work, increased work on the standards issue. And I think standards are the real issue for the industry, rather than some sort of perception that kind of shifts and wanes, what have you, and informed by events overseas and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure we'll get to that in a minute. And the other thing I would say is that there is a common perception that the Press Council is kind of the publisher's court. It isn't. The publishers don't have the majority on the Press Council. The public members and the journalistic members do. And so Campbell and I sit there and take our medicine broadly and happily pay for the... Did I say happily? I'm not sure if I meant to say happily. But anyway, pay for the privilege.
Okay. Now, before, while we're still talking around the Press Council, clearly for self-regulation to have a shot at working, it needs the whole industry to be behind it. We saw Seven West Media, and the West Australian, withdraw from the Press Council. Julian, if you can't get them back within your tent, then surely you can't possibly claim to be self-regulating the industry.
Yes, I think that's one of the great challenges that now faces everyone involved in this area. I think one part of what needed to be done, and there's still a lot to do, but one part is to strengthen the Press Council. A second part is to extend it to all media, to be platform neutral. Third part, though, is to address the question of ensuring that the key players are in it. Now, as Campbell mentioned, we did, as part of the negotiation after the Finkelstein report, it has been agreed now that the members can't get out at less than 4 years' notice, and their funding is committed specifically in dollar terms 3 years in advance. So that's a very major improvement. When I mentioned that to a fairly senior figure over here recently from the UK, he was astounded that he managed to achieve that. But I don't want to pretend that that solves the whole situation in perpetuity. And of course, Seven West Media got out the day before that new arrangement came in. The two key questions that need to be addressed now are: to what extent, if any, should there be compulsory membership of the body? And both the Finkelstein inquiry and the convention that there should be. I think the council feels that, at the very least, that the Finkelstein requirements went too far down into small players. But there may be a view, at least amongst some council members, that the convergence review, which only picked off the sort of top 15 and said they need to begin, perhaps they need to go further. But my own view, at least, is that we need to get clearly addressed and that there probably will need to be compulsory membership. But of course, that's got to be compulsory membership in a body that is appropriately designed and appropriate both from the point of view of the industry and the community. But the other key issue, and which personally I would have preferred to having to resort to any compulsory membership at all, is also canvassed and supported in brief by both the Convergence Review and the Finkelstein Review, and that is to say that where there are privileges given to the media, whether in statute or elsewhere, to media or media organisations or journalists, those are the sorts of definitions that are used, then they should be conditional on being subject to this regulatory body. To me, that it's a pretty natural thing. You're getting privileges. Okay, firstly, we've got to define who gets these privileges. The meaning of the journalist now is, and in fact of the media or media organisation, is now so unclear that they're no longer valid and useful definition.
Okay, and just before I turn to the rest of the panellists, it sounds like you don't have much hope of getting Seven West Media back on a voluntary basis.
Oh, I don't really, I suppose, frankly, just personally, I don't turn my mind to that much at the moment.
It has been reported it was a personality clash between you and Bob Cronin over at Seven West.
Yeah, no, I mean, they wouldn't. I'll leave that comment unsaid, but...
No, feel free.
No, look, that wasn't a key issue at all. It would have been, there were differences, I think, with adjudication. And I will just say a wrong attribution of the responsibility for those adjudications to me. That's all I'll say personally. I didn't drive them at all. But no, they're a mix of factors. It certainly wasn't principally a personality clash. I wasn't involved in the final negotiations. The publishers talking amongst themselves. But I do, just before leaving, want to emphasise the real importance of what I was saying about these statutory privileges, because what that means is it one of the reasons why I'm keen on it is that we need to encourage, some people don't like me using this adjective, but I'm going to keep using it, serious online contributors to public discussion. We need to encourage them to commit themselves to specified standards and an independent complaints handling system, not just to ensure their quality is adequate, but to enable other people who are getting into the sort of, you know, the morass almost, or certainly the enormous range of things online, to know these are people who have committed themselves to serious standards. Because post-Finkelstein, for example, I've said before publicly and repeated, I don't think the print media covered the Finkelstein inquiry at all well. There were some exceptions, especially in the early days of Australia, and the Financial Review, I thought, did well, the others didn't. But online was good. But the trouble is online doesn't have the mainstream exposure that we need. So that was just a small example of why.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring in Campbell at this point. Campbell, firstly, from the point of view of self-regulation, do you need all of the major players there? And secondly, you know, you must have findings which go against what you would want. Are you always comfortable accepting that umpire's decision?
On the first point, look, I was disappointed that Seven West made their decision. West Australians quite regularly make decisions not to be involved too much with the rest of Australia. So there's a context there. I think the test for the West Australian and Seven West is to see that the standards body that they have set up with some very prominent West Australians, does that deliver to the consumers of West Australia and their other media's arms and hold them to good standards? And if they do, as uncomfortable as that, we're here to ensure standards and that the consumers and readers are well served. If they do, then that's the way it is. But yes, I was disappointed. On the other matter, yes, like Julian and I have robust discussions about the fact that I think complaints or adjudications have been wrong, and after the event I make my feelings very plain. But as Peter said, we don't sit in those complaints hearings. We see them as they come, and as journalists we have our view. But if you think about a professional publisher now in this country, and indeed I don't actually subscribe to the fact that, or the now accepted fact that we buried adjudications in the past. I think that there was a massive amount of misinformation about how newspapers had behaved with the Press Council previously.
Oh, come on, I remember as late as last December there was an adjudication on page 104 of the Telegraph.
Yes, that's right, and it was on the page 124 in a massive...
124, sorry.
Okay, a massive, well, I'm not, let's say it was in the 100s. It was a bit, now this is, Tim, to pick you up on that, a classic case of deliberate misinformation and, to use an Australian word, pure bullshit. Look at that paper on the Saturday of the Daily Telegraph. It was a big book, I think it was a Saturday, it might have been a Friday. It was a big book, lots of inserts. In that day, the op-ed section of the Daily Telegraph is driven into the back of the book, and newspaper people know what that is. That adjudication ran in front of the newspaper's op-ed section. For people to manufacture the idea that was buried is to fail the very journalistic standards that people criticise us for doing. It was deliberate wrongdoing and misinformation and spin.
Should you have teased it from page 2, do you think?
Well, at that stage, we didn't have that system that's now in place. And Julian didn't have a problem with buried around that adjudication. And yet others decided that this was course lit. People had a problem yesterday when we ran the pointer on page 6, when the full adjudication on page 6.
And you had a lovely double page ad on page 2 and 3.
There are not people who are going to ever be happy with the way we behave, and that is a context here that has to be understood, and the Fairfax colleagues have every right to be upset about this. This is finding a way to put the standards of the Murdoch empire, for want of a better word, on trial in this country for crimes committed in the UK.
Okay, we'll come to overseas in a minute. I'll go to Peter, then I'm going to go to Matthew, and then we'll take a question or two from the floor.
Sorry, Tim, could I just...
Sorry, Julian, I will come to you, but Peter's not coming on this point yet.
So we do have a page 2 teaser to the full adjudication, which is, you know, again, another improvement. I It's interesting that back at my shop, the debate has currently, today in fact, is about having to run adjudications in which we were on the side of the angels. So we're running these long adjudications in which we kind of, you put the headline, "We was right," which we won't do that. It's bad grammar. But and maybe we weren't. But anyway, the West Australian. Look, I miss Bob. He added a lot of colour and movement to the press council. I think it is, unfortunately, he's gone, but I fully respect his right to do so.
Matthew.
Well, I think part of the problem with the West Australian newspaper group and being out of the new improved model is just that. I mean, whatever its merits and however it performs, and it does look as if there's been a certain amount of attention paid to setting up a good body, it remains a voluntary body. It remains outside the rest of the press council, and that's been one of the issues. In terms of the information that was presented to us at the inquiry about adjudications being buried and so on, that was presented to us by the press council, both current and past. So, and it's detailed in quite extensively in the report. So, I don't accept that that's inaccurate. I mean, I'm not speaking about the most recent one that you raised in December. I don't know the details of that case. I'm talking about what was presented to us at the inquiry about what had happened in the past, and I draw your attention to that in the sense that we, as an inquiry, were only able to look at what we were presented with at that time. It's clear that there has been some movement on some of these issues more recently. Whether it was happening behind closed doors, I don't know. That was behind closed doors. I wasn't party to any of those discussions. I'd have to take Peter and Campbell's word for that, and that's fine. But what we were presented with was something different, and that was what we, as an inquiry, responded to.
Okay, well, briefly, Julian, if you wanted to come back on that point, and then we'll take a question or two.
Yeah, it was just on the question of adjudications and their placement. I do think even up to now there are problems about lack of prominence, but we're making very considerable progress, and as I said, the last week is a classic example of that. I do think that the situation was not quite as bad as some people said, including Finkelstein, etc. For example, they said a lot of them aren't published. Well, that isn't true. There hasn't been one not published, I'm told, by the council staff for 30 years.
Well, I don't think the word "lot" was used.
I'm not talking about what Finkelstein said, but what others said. But it wasn't adequate at all. Now, we're moving to get it in the right way. Just very quickly on the page 120 or 4 or whatever, that's an example of how one has to look at the detail, and until I actually physically got the newspaper in my hands, which I insisted on doing, I thought 124 was not adequate. But when I looked at the newspaper on that day and I saw what was around that page, which was the editorial page, the lead news stories, by and large, the main news stories were around those pages. And this was, so 124 didn't at all capture the prominence that adjudication had, and of course it also, the prominence we require depends on the prominence of the story. I just want to say, though, on Western Australian system, I don't want to sort of get into an extended battle about its merits or otherwise, but I just point out two, what to me, a very substantial weakness. One is you can't go directly to that body. You have to go through the newspaper itself. Now, that's a major drawback, especially when it's a one newspaper council. So those two characteristics, I think, frankly, are... as I say, I don't want to get in a fight, but I'll just say we need to be very, very careful about thinking that's anywhere near appropriate. A body is much more likely to be reasonably independent if it's going across all publications rather than being one set up all on the line.
Okay, to the floor. Did anyone want to ask anything? I see a hand over there. Mind waiting for the microphone? If you could please tell us who you are and where you're from.
Jonathan Holmes from Media Watch. It says regulating the media up there. We've been talking about regulating newspapers. Convergence Review is recommending essentially a press council for all the media, including television, including radio, including a lot of online stuff, and a kind of compulsory self-regulation. That's to say, you guys go on copping up most of the money, and presumably channels 7, if it has to come back in, and 9 do as well, and so on. But maybe a little bit of government funding up to 30% as well. Do Campbell and Peter particularly think that can work with your organization, to be prepared to put money into that organization as opposed to the Press Council?
Perhaps Campbell first on that.
As part of the work that Julian has had underway, as a first step, and as he said, the major newspaper publishers' websites fall under the council's auspices, and to us, that's the solvable and needing to be solved issue right here, and we are very happy to fund a press council that extends its reach into online journalism. The next step to having an overarching body that oversees the standards of news and news and opinion journalism into a broadcast sense is something that certainly you can see the logic of that, as essentially anybody who's publishing news is also broadcasting and running text, etc. So we can see the logic of it, but we can also see the danger, and the bit in the middle, which is the online space, currently an area which led to the convergence. Broadcasters are regulated currently, so we don't see that there's a burning platform for the need to go over there. But eventually, could we get there? Yes, but I think Julian's planned approach to it to embrace online is the right way in stage.
Peter.
Yeah, I'd hate to agree with Campbell. But I think, you know, we talk about being platform agnostic. The logic of that is that at some point in the future, everything is, you know, we're all agnostic. I don't see that right now. I think we need to, I do agree with Campbell, you know, that essentially we do online now, and then we see how the shape of the industry plays out. I'm not a... I don't think it's an illogical step to think of one regulator to rule them all, self-funded regulator.
Okay, I'll move on to another question and bring in Matthew and Julian at that point. Something that happens whenever I write a story on Mumbrella about a press council ruling, about an ACMA ruling when it's broadcast, is there's a finding that something's been breached. And then the comment thread that follows is, so what happens next? Well, have they been fined? Are they in trouble? What is it? And it's the fact that there's a finding of a breach of the principles, and that seems to be the end of the story. You know, I guess someone would look at the telly findings of this week, that there was unacceptable language used in the headlines around asylum seekers, not separating fact from opinion when it comes to the bike lanes, etc. It kind of puzzles the people who aren't involved in the regulation that there isn't some other sanction than the finding. Campbell, do you think there should be?
No.
Why not?
Because it misinterprets and disempowers the fact that a professional organisation has to publicly declare that it has breached a set of standards. And a footballer hates giving away a penalty. A doctor hates being found that there's been some, you know, that he's breached some procedures. All of the people who say that the press council is a toothless tiger haven't been bitten by it. And an editor and a newspaper absolutely hates having to devote space to somebody else's opinion and assessment that the newspaper has done the wrong thing. And is a very, very public and very, very prominent and very, very painful procedure to go through. And we have signed up for it. And frankly, there are not too many other organisations, professional organisations, where the referee's ruling is that prominent and that in your face and that difficult. Yeah, journalists hate being called to task like that. And the challenge for us to be upfront and quick and on the first side of it, admit when we are wrong and correct it, and then accept the referee's ruling, you know, beyond that is an attack on fundamental freedoms of our society.
Okay, Julian, I'll come to you. Are you toothless?
No, but we're not, you know, as strong and as effective as we should be. But I think that I think the important thing is firstly to get such powers as we do have to be using them properly. That's what I'm focusing on.
Would you like more powers, more strict sanctions?
Well, I'll come to that in a moment, but in terms of the publishing of adjudication, the staff at the council now, as yesterday, have spent most of the morning tracking down, because we just released some adjudications, not only tracking down that the print adjudication is adequate, making sure that what we required on the home page of the website is adequate. We've gone back to them in two cases because it's only a single line when it's meant to be a bigger thing with our logo, bigger stuff homepage, checking that the link from that homepage to the adjudication is adequate, checking then that our adjudications are also linked to the original article. So, and we're going to do this all the time now, very detailed requirements, and we're insisting that they be complied with to the letter. And we're saying what headlines we want. We're not saying exactly what page we want, but for example, with one recently we said it's got to be in the top half of the first five pages. So we're getting better on that.
Okay, I want to bring in Matthew, and I'm aware that we probably only have five minutes left.
Sorry, the other thing is that, and this is a legitimate point made by someone about one of the adjudications this week, we're also having summaries which will be up front, because in many ways, in the middle of a long adjudication, you may not get to the point unless you sort of need to get a life maybe. So we're going for summaries that are more prominent. Lastly, though, there's a real danger. Well, sorry, I'll mention also, these are now contractually binding. We could take our members to court on this question of not publishing adjudications prominently. That is now contractually binding and enforceable.
Okay, Matthew.
On the question of sanctions?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't go much further than Campbell has in the sense that, and that's what was in the inquiry's report. It was simply asking that whether a complaint had been upheld, that the complaint be published, and that the person who was making the complaint was given a right of reply. The way in which the inquiry's report was covered in the mainstream media, by and large, was to suggest that we're all off to Stalinist Russia or even the back to the Reich press chamber in Nazi Germany and so on, which was totally ludicrous. That was not envisaged in any way, shape or form. And in fact, what's envisaged is to provide someone with a right of reply where a complaint has been upheld. And you need to remember that the media, the news media, had the first word in these issues. That is, they've published something in the first place. Giving someone a right of reply when there's a complaint that is seen to be legitimate and is upheld seems to me to add to free speech. It's not a curb on free speech or indeed on freedom of the press. If a press is taking itself seriously, then, and if something is wrong, then you do have to publish a correction. And yes, it pains us all as journalists or editors do that. But if you are professional, as Campbell says, then it's something that you have to pony up to.
Let me just bring in Peter on the same point I put to Campbell. Does it actually hurt that much having to publish the correction?
Look, I think the way to look at this is self-interest. We put ourselves up. We have values and ethics. They're published on our website. They're in the paper. We talk about our duty to uphold democracy, freedom of the press, and all these very highfalutin, very valuable ideas that we have in our society. Therefore, it's in our interest to fess up when we're wrong. It's in our interest to do everything that we can do to improve the standards we have. I mean, it's sort of this the logic, the alternative logic escapes me, really, that we wouldn't have an interest in doing that. And yes, it hurts.
In the 2 minutes that we have, does anyone have a question that can be answered in one sentence? Otherwise, I have one. Okay, in a sentence from each of you, does the public trust the media?
The evidence of the opinion polls that were looked at, analysed quite extensively in an independent media inquiry report is that no, the public doesn't. And it's not a question of whether journalists are loved or hated. It's a question of trust. And as Peter alluded to in his answer just then, it goes to the credibility of the press. It's not about whether they're loved or hated.
Campbell,
that's something that you're supporting.
Does the public trust you?
They trust us a lot more than they will tell you they trust.
Julian.
You know, I'm going to duck it because I want to say one sentence on something else that's very important, and that is that I want to make sure there isn't some misleading impression about the impact of the Stein inquiry and the convergence. perspective. We were moving in the direction you've spoken about. We've moved further and faster than we would if those inquiries hadn't been held. We wouldn't have got as big an increase in funding, in my view, and we wouldn't have got the commitments not to get out at less than 4 years' notice without those reviews and inquiries. So I just want to make that clear, but it's also important to emphasise, because it's overlooked, that we were moving quite a bit with very strong support, particularly from News Limited, before that.
Peter.
Can I take that a different way? Does the public need us? And the answer is yes. And yes, look, the trust issue is, look, I think they trust us more than they let on, but clearly there are people who are prepared to say the alternative view, and Matthew cited a lot of surveys that said that. I don't, I still don't think, I think that people need us and want us, and the concept of not having us is a very, you know, is a grave, grave thought. And so I think people love us, really.
Please thank all four of the panel, Julian, Matthew, Campbell and Peter.
That's it from the Mumbrella cast for this week. More from Mumbrella 360 next time. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.